Welcome to this episode of the Comedy Defect Podcast. My name is Winter, I'm a comedian, and this is my show. So I went a bit, oh, my show. Went a bit like Conan or Grum. But this is my show, guys. So if you're new to the show, welcome. If you're old to the show, thanks for coming back, guys. And if you don't know what this show's about, if you've listened to it for a long time and still don't know, it's about comedy. It's about talking to comedians about their process, any little bits of information they can give me to inspire you guys, and also gives me fuel for me to, you know, get back to work again. You know, we tip away, but, you know, sometimes I go, yes, that's what it is. That's where it is. That's where it's at. You know, comedy can get jaded sometimes. You know, it's not like, sometimes it takes more than it gives. I'm telling you that, it really does. It takes a lot, all the hours on the road, but you know what, right? Look, let's stay on the positive side, you know, but, because I'm probably negative because I can't walk yet. I've told you that before. Yes, I still can't walk, but hey, look, we'll go get past this. You know, this too shall pass. But so look, this podcast is with a fantastic comedian. She's a sister from another mother. She is half Sri Lankan, like myself. It is the excellent comedian Stella Graham. And she runs her own podcast called Stell Me About It. And we talk about loads of things on this podcast. It sort of runs away with itself. Sometimes I like to see where it goes. Stella started on the 18th of August, 2008. And weirdly, I edited her podcast on the 18th of August, 2023. Isn't that mad? So yeah, it was a kind of bit of a coincidence. I edited it on her birthday. But anyway, a comedy birthday. But look, this, she's an excellent comedian, and she's on all the socials as Stella Graham, and it's S-T-E-L-L-A-G-R-A-H-A-M, and she's stellagraham.com, and on YouTube as The Stella Graham. So go find her all those places, go check her stuff out, and if you ever see her on bill, you will not be disappointed. She's got some excellent material. She's a brilliant joke writer. Go and check her out. So all the intro done. You can follow me. I'm on Instagram at Winter Dominus. That's W-I-N-T-E-R-D-O-M-I-N-U-S. And you can find me. I'm on YouTube, all those places. You can also go to Facebook, like the page, the Comedy Defect page, or you can go to the group and join that. And you can see the podcast come up there. And you can also see the gig dates, which I'll be previewing my show, which is going to be about me breaking my legs and learn to walk again. But some great jokes in there. I've written some really good jokes. A lot of them drug-fueled. But look, there's some great jokes in there. I'm off all the drugs now, but some great drugs in there. No drugs. Some great jokes in there. Look, you know, it's like how art was created. Like, you know, all the rock stars, they took a load of drugs. Look at the Rolling Stones, look how many drugs they took. And look how their music, well, okay, look, maybe it hasn't aged well. Nothing ages well apart from Mick Jagger. He's kicking ass on the stages these days still. Was he 70, 80 now? I don't know. But yeah, anyway, look, you can follow me in all those places. And if you like this podcast enough and you want to donate, fuck it, why not? Go to Patreon, type in The Comedy Defect Podcast and donate as much or as little as you feel this podcast is worth. If you don't want to donate, that's okay. Just tell your friend or not, or keep the info for yourself about your favorite episode, or lock it away. Don't tell anyone. Well, it's, you know, it's for public consumption anyway. Look, whatever. Do what you want. You know, people are weird. Just enjoy yourself. Knock yourself out. Look, I don't want to give you another job. As I say, we've got enough jobs in the world, haven't we? But look, this is episode 112 with the excellent comedian Stella Graham. Enjoy. Stella Graham, welcome to the Comedy Effect. How are you getting on?
I'm good. It's sunny outside. I've got myself a steaming hot cup of tea, got my hands on it, so I'm quite content. How are you?
Do you go for like the bucket, or do you just go for like the like normal average cup so you can just pace yourself?
I mean, I do like a decent sized bucket of tea. By the afternoon, I think I might go down to like a more sort of normal mortal size mug.
Right, that's cool. So just eat, taper off at the end. I like that. I just stick with the large cup, to be honest. But although I do say that, I lie today, I've actually just gone with the normal size, and I don't feel like I'm missing out. I feel like that it's just kind of you know, it feels like an appropriate amount of tea rather than like overdoing it and then you have a cold bottom cup of tea, which you just never really like.
Nobody wants
to force it down, you know. It's not good.
That's right.
I just bought myself a scales as well because I weighed myself fully physically, then I was very, very depressed, and then I was like, right, well, that's it now.
I'm weighing everything I eat now. Because I saw one guy do it the other day. And I was like, I'm just going to be that guy. It's like, you know, take the scales to wherever, say restaurant. But okay, right, takeaway.
Okay. You know, away. So did you not own a set of, you're talking about scales, like a set of like bathroom scales or whatever?
Yeah, like, step on like yeah, the beginning of the shame and sadness was the, of course, the normal scales, which you can see how much you've just let yourself go. And then the other scales were the one where you're going to continue the self-loathing and destroy your life even further and devoid of happiness completely.
I own a set of those scales, but I don't just go by those. They're nice to have. Mm. So every now and then you can step on and be like, really? Whereas yeah. It depends what your goals are. But for me personally, I like to keep an eye on the Chumbawamba just to see if I've let things slide a little. But I've got a pair of old work trousers I've had for ages, and they are my benchmark. So if I put them on and they're a little bit loose, I'm chuffed.
Great.
But if I put them on and they are snug, I'm like, what have I done?
Sadness.
And then even then, right, you can get a bit of bloating. Yeah. You can just get bloated and be like, all right, what's going on? Mm. But the scales, they're tricksy, man. I don't know. I don't know how much you should let them upset.
Got one of those ones, you know, the ones, not the super expensive.
So the body
ones.
Fat percentage and all that. Yeah, tells you your blood pressure and when you're going to die. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. You know, that's it. How really, you know, the it's a sliding scale, isn't it, of misery. But, you know, so yeah, I got one of those and I was like, right, you know, but of course I didn't spend the money on getting the good ones that actually are accurate. I just got the one from China. I was like, yeah, that should be fine. I mean, you know, and then with the app, it's got the app. It should be fine. Yeah, it'd be grand. And then it just absolutely, people that reviewed it went, this makes no sense whatsoever. All this, these figures are completely, you know, devoid of any sort of actual accurate explanation. But yeah, so it's just one of those. But yes, I did that. And I'm on the keto again. So no fun, no pasta, no rice, no sugar, no nothing like that. You know, it's just sad times.
See, I'm into it, you know. I think I don't mind the old keto because I've experimented with a lot of diets over the years. So you name it, I've tried it. And what I quite like about keto is that you can fry green vegetables in butter and put salt on them. And is there any better way, if you have to eat greens, is there any better way to do it?
Oh my God, yeah. You know, the favourite thing, is it broccoli with butter or what is it? What do you have?
Cavolo Nero.
What is that?
AKA black kale. You can get it, you can even get it at Lidl, to be honest, but you can get it in a lot of the main supermarkets, and it's sort of like regular kale can be a little bit, it depends where you get it from, but it can be a little bit woody. This stuff is softer, and if you just wash it, chop it, whack it in a pan, bit of butter, bit of salt, it's wicked, and that's probably my favourite. A lot of broccoli, a lot of courgette, a lot of that, but again, it's all about either a coconut oil or a butter or olive oil, a bit of salt.
I mean, I did the keto at like the beginning of the first lockdown and it was great. Brilliant. Loved it. I found that healing though, like I walked with a dog and I threw the stick and it kind of bounced back and caught me in the hip and it scratched me and it didn't heal properly for ages. I mean, like not, like it wasn't like gashed. I wasn't impaled on it, but it was just like, I was like, that didn't heal like very quickly at all. Anyway, so that was the first lockdown and I was like, it was amazing. And then birthday came and I was like, oh man, okay, well this is, I've got ice cream cake and it's just not happening. You know, it's like, come on, it's terrible.
Yeah, they say, you know, things like keto, for some people are not sustainable. Some people absolutely love it.
Yeah.
But for me, I had a little bit of guilt around eating that much sort of meat, fish and eggs because I don't know why. And I'm the biggest hypocrite, so I don't like profess to be, oh, I'm such an animal lover. But I do have like a little bit of guilt. Like I even did Vegan January again this year. Okay. And I did it in 2016. Mm. And what I like about it is it does sort of draw awareness to what you're eating. It does make you mix up your diet and you'll start having other stuff that you wouldn't normally have. Whereas before January, I was eating, have you heard of the Pegan?
No. Diet?
This is, they've all got daft names, haven't they? But it's a term that was coined by, I think it's Dr. Mark Hyman.
Right.
And he sort of looked at what are the best bits of the paleo diet and the best bits of the vegan diet.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing they both agree on, it's that vegetables are good for you.
Yeah.
So you want to have veg, because a lot of people will do keto and they'll do what's called dirty keto.
Okay.
I think Tyson Fury did this where it's like, oh yeah, the keto diet, I'm just going to eat loads of beef burgers, loads of cheese and loads of like high fat, high meat. And sure, you will lose weight, but the Pegan sort of combining those two ideas, so you're encouraged to have plenty of veg.
Yeah.
And then, yes, of course, meat, fish, less dairy actually on the Pegan. They discourage that. Eggs and stuff. But then, of course, nuts, avocados. But I have to tell you, I am a bit of a sucker for halloumi and chorizo. I will have those two. That's a guaranteed once a week dish. I'm having them.
Nothing around a bit of squeaky cheese, and I do love a little bit of chorizo. I love it. I do. Cravings for the cheese, of course. The cheese definitely just cancels out any hunger whatsoever. It's fine. It's perfect. But I did the paleo when I was working shift work, and that was the diet was actually called before I did it. It was one which was for people who need to lose weight if they've got an operation coming or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like it was actually called the dreadful but successful diet. Now, the first day you get to eat, all you eat is eggs. That's all you eat. You get like 9 eggs, right? So you got 3 eggs for breakfast, 3 eggs for lunch, and then 3 eggs for dinner. And oh my God, you're just like, I just can't eat another egg.
But I was just about to say, I bet nothing gets moving after that.
You're right. But the next day, the next day, right? The next day you get to like, you kind of flush it out with like whatever it is. It's like greens and like spinach or like broccoli and whatever. And so it's just, and then a little bit of fruit too. So it's just like, it is serious. You do, it strips like you down.
Stop.
Exactly. You're right. You nailed it there. It's exactly that. Don't feel good today.
You'll be shitting like the buses, mate. You don't see one for days and then three come at once.
That's exactly right. But you know what? It does shred you completely. It's amazing. But those 2 weeks are sad. You know, fatigue you get, you know, when you're first kind of cracking into
the fog.
The sadness. Or like when you're walking, you got just no, you could not don't have the right amount of energy. You know, that kind of just, there's no kick, no afterburn in you, like, if you know what I mean.
I think they say that's the minerals, isn't it? Like the potassium and I've read a bit on this, but I sort of never lean too heavily into it because I think it's keto, like full on keto for me is just a little bit too extreme.
Yeah.
What I like about vegan is that you can have a little bit of sweet potato here and there.
Oh, yeah.
And that might be a better fit for you, and you will see results. I'm assuming it's weight loss that you're going for.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, like,
not because I think you're a fatty. What you said about buying the scales, I was like, let me chase these breadcrumbs.
Why the fuck do you think this podcast is audio only at the moment? Like, you know what I mean? That is why this has happened. You know, so
Come on, Winter. You've done enough Zoom calls now. You just got to get used to the sight of your own double chin. I'm getting used to mine. It's fine.
Oh, thank God it's widescreen. But like, so you've been doing some comedy videos like with workouts as well, haven't you? I've seen a couple of them. The kettle exercise, which was great. I loved it. Great.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's always been one of those silly things where I've been like, kettle, you say?
Mm-hmm.
I've got a kettle around the house. But yeah, I think that was one of the fortunate things about when everything happened with lockdown and people were like, oh, the gyms are closing. I had already been doing workouts from home for quite a while because we moved for a short time. Me and my fella lived in Surbiton, and then we moved down the road to Chessington. And where we previously lived, the gym was walking distance.
Yeah.
So it was fairly easy just to, you know, grab your stuff and go. Great. But then suddenly it was like, if you've got to like pack a bag, get in the car, go there. I thought like door to door, the whole thing of like doing a workout became quite time consuming. So over time, I bought some weights, some resistance bands, and there's quite a lot you can do with just body weight anyway around the house. So when they were like, oh no, the gyms are closed, I was like, oh dear, what a shame. I was like one of those smug nomads who's actually got a pull-up bar in the house and a few other bits and pieces. So when it came to like, obviously, with all the comedy gigs closing and stuff, like, I'm an attention seeker, Winter. I'm going to have to do something. So I started filming videos, and I do get quite short-tempered. So I thought, what a great way to combine two of the things I love, exercise and losing my shit. Let's make some videos.
Great.
So that's how that came about.
And like, so what did you go for with the resistance bands? Did you go for green, or did you go like, the green is, it's hard, the green band, isn't it? Those like,
I mean, I didn't know if they were all like a standard thing, but so I'm just looking at mine now. So the black band, that's 18 kg. Then the green is 17.2. There's a red and a blue and a yellow. So for different exercises, I'll use combinations of bands, like for the pull down and the seated row and whatever. But I generally like to get two or three on there and really pour that rage out into the muscle.
I've got the flat bands. It's the rubber bands. Do you know what I mean? Like is that the ones you're talking about?
Ribbons. I think we're probably talking about
ribbons.
Slightly different things. Mine are resistance bands, so they're like tube type bands, if you like, and they come with the handles and the thing that you can hook over the door.
Yeah, yeah, great.
Start slowly trashing your house and pulling all your doors off the hinges.
That's it. It won't destroy your frame. Oh, it fucking definitely will destroy your frame. It will.
Always got to get the screwdriver out and tighten up that hinge afterwards. And then there's the pull-up bar as well. I've got two of those.
Cool.
And yeah, that's nice, putting some marks
you got to sand down later. Now, because I've got something today in a minute. What other purchases have you bought, right? You've gone, do you have TikTok at the moment?
I have it. Okay. I'm more of a watcher than a poster.
Have you managed to sell you anything that you will use once and not ever use again?
Not TikTok, but Instagram. My fella, he's a mug for it. I tell you, he'll come up to me and be like, oh, I saw this thing and it popped up on Instagram. I'm like, fine. So it was like a sort of, not quite a bathroom grout, but it was like, hey, have you got a hole in the wall?
Yeah.
Oh, just fill it in with this thing, something, something.
Little pen thing, like, yeah, little takes it off and puts it on. I got that.
Yeah, so there was definitely one of those. And just every now and then he'll go, you know, maybe we should get one of those, like, outdoor barbecue pizza oven things. I'm like, you've been fucking looking on Instagram again. Yeah. He's like, how did you know? I don't think I've got suckered in into any of those adverts, but I did buy a knife. So there was, this is nothing to do with rage. This is, again, about one of my favourite things, eating. An Australian guy, and he posts cooking videos. And in one of his videos, he was talking about this particular little knife. And he says, if you don't have a decent knife, get yourself one of these cheeky little dickheads, as he called it.
Yeah.
And I got one. I'll tell you what, it's the best steak knife I've ever used.
Okay.
I'm well into it. It's a Victorinox.
Yeah, a Victorinox, knife. Okay.
Yeah, right. It's great. I got, I think, like 7-8 quid off Amazon.
Wow. Wicked. Okay. And it's over 2 meters long, so it's great for social distancing.
Yeah, exactly.
No, come on, Winter. Get a joke in there. Get a fucking joke in there. Hammer that in. Oh, you've been doing these videos. How many have you done now?
Oh, how many have I done? Well, this is the funny thing. I was doing them for a while. I'm not sure what number I got up to, because then, you know, like your good self, Winter, I started doing a podcast. And I suddenly realised, because as fun as the videos are to do, it's like I've got to write them, film them, be on camera, be like, do the lighting, do the filming, do the sound, edit it all together, chop it up, and then post it. And from start to finish, it was quite a time-consuming process, which I didn't mind too much. But when you're doing it all on your own, it's quite a lot of time, whereas the podcast was a lot quicker, was easier, and also I get to talk to someone else in the process. So I kind of, I think the last video I did was about Vegan January, and I haven't done another one since. So I'd say for the last 8 or 9 weeks or so, I haven't done one. But yeah, I don't know how many I got up to,
like,
in the end.
I guess it's like, you know, the third lockdown has just been a fucking, an absolute, it's like three strikes. You're like, okay, well, that's it now. That's enough of this shit now. I'm just going to go and, okay, fine. This life is telling, the universe is telling me I should stay under my duvet and just, you know, eat cheese and, like, you know, the halloumi and chorizo. Just stay there.
I talk about lockdown. So I was always into sort of low carb eating for a while now, because I always found of all the sort of like food things that I did, that worked best for me. But lockdown 2 broke me, and I fell onto the sourdough wagon, and I couldn't hate myself more for it.
That's such a sad thing to say.
I'm someone who never, like, does bread. I never bake bread. Right? But friends of mine were talking about it, and I was just getting a little bit of FOMO. I looked into it, and I was like, oh, that takes far too long. You've got to be kidding me. But then lockdown two, I was like, oh, fuck, I might as well give it a go.
So you made it.
I did.
Oh, man. I love it. This is like the worst support group ever. So, you know, I got on the sourdough wagon. You know, it was tough. It was tough for a while.
I was like, I'm not doing bloody banana bread.
Oh, but that, God, was the weird thing, wasn't it?
I think I just thought, if everyone's doing it, I don't want to.
Fair.
And then, but at the same time, when I realised there was a shortage of flour and yeast, I was suddenly like, well, then I must get some immediately.
Totally.
You know, it's like, I don't even make bread. Why did I care?
Yeah,
I managed to get hold of some flour from, like, there was like a little company, you know, one of the tiny shops suddenly became invaluable, didn't they, during lockdown? And then my fellow, his name's Tom, his mum, she sent me some yeast in the post.
Oh, wow. Like a drug deal.
A couple of sachets. Yeah, I know, like knocking about. So I did some focaccia.
Yeah, oh, nice, nice, yeah.
Early on. I mean, if you put that much olive oil and salt in a bread, it can't not be good, right?
Yeah, this is true. This is very, very true. And it will keep for a long time as well. Also, the...
Not in our house.
You know, with the keto stuff, I was like, I'd limit myself sometimes, you know, eggs and soldiers. You want to have eggs and soldiers, you don't have anything to dip in it, right? And you have, like, what's that brown one? It's a German one. It's... what's it called? I always forget the name of that one. It's the... it's not pumpernickel, is it?
It could be, I know what it's the stuff that makes you go, that's the one I know it
it's
by.
Fucking rye bread, isn't it? It's rye bread. So I had that.
Not rye bread, but rye.
Rye. That's a very German bread, that one. You put it in, it might as well be rye bread because you got to put it in three times. And if you don't, on the third time, get it before it pops out, it just becomes ash, doesn't it? Because it's like, it refuses to toast. It just is like, I will not toast for you. I will sit here. You put me in the freezer because you want to keep me for a long time. You've cut me off of my other friends and you put me in the toaster and now I'm just going to sit here and burn because I refuse to be toast. You will eat me as bread and nothing else. It's like, and it just, it's not really unsatisfying. But again,
that stuff's intense, isn't it? Although if you're doing keto and you're not meant to have bread, have you made keto bread?
My wife has made it and it was pretty awesome.
That's quite popular in this house.
It's like a cake though, isn't it? It's not really like a bread. It's like just with the coconut flakes and flour as well. Is it?
So you can make it with one egg, a bit of butter, three tablespoons of almond flour, and then it's a little bit of baking powder or baking soda, I forget which one.
Yeah.
And then you just mix it all together, put it in the microwave for 90 seconds and it comes out with that sort of spongy, bready texture of like a slice of bread, depending on what like shape container you put it in. So if you've got like some people I know will put it in like a rectangular Tupperware and it will come out like a slice of bread. What I tend to do is heat up a frying pan, put some butter in that, put more salt, fry it, and that, it's wicked, I tell you. So if you are having a mad bread craving, it's not even that hard to do.
All right, well, I will certainly do that. That sounds so quick and simple. I can do, that's like making scrambled eggs. Easy.
I love it. I love, the omelette challenge on Saturday morning cooking show. Did you ever see that?
No.
I think it was Saturday Kitchen. It's like two chefs competing against the clock to cook the fastest omelette they can.
Yeah.
So you've got to like get the eggs, beat them, get the butter in the pan and try and cook this thing as fast as possible. That is pretty much what I would do before going out the door to a gig.
Oh my God.
It's like, the train's coming, get the omelette done as fast as possible. Because it's like, it's hot.
Yeah.
It's fat, it's protein, it's tasty. What's not to love?
That's great. No, I mean, like, I definitely found the difference in energy when I go to gigs when I was on the keto, just night and day. Really felt good, you know? Stella Graham, you're from Coventry, and you are half Sri Lankan, and you have done, if I can count, you've done 8 shows, is that correct?
8 shows?
Like fringe shows and stuff, is that right?
Oh, is it as many as that? I feel like it might be a little less, because I reckon it's about 6.
6.
I think.
Did you just change the name?
I'm just trying, trot out the same old guess and hope nobody notices. It's pretty crazy, really, because when I look back, I really think I did the first 3 far, far sooner than I ever should have. The first one, I feel bad for people who came to see it, because I'm like, I was just utterly, utterly clueless. Had no right really to be doing an hour at that point. But such is the way with the open access of the Edinburgh Fringe. Yeah. If you say, hey, I've got a show, nobody really checks.
That's it. So what was your first show?
So the first one I did was called, I think that was Karma Comedian.
Okay, cool.
And so to give you a little backstory, even though I am from Coventry, I moved to New Zealand for about 5 years.
Oh, right.
And it was while I was living out there that I first did stand-up. Because, you know, when you move to the other side of the planet, why not think you're hilarious? Nobody knows me here. Why don't I get up at the comedy club and give that a go?
Yeah.
So I started in the scene over there. I knew very little about the stand-up scene in the UK. I didn't even know what the Edinburgh Fringe was.
Right.
Wow. Because coming from Coventry, no one I hung out with talked about it. I don't think anyone in my family had ever been. I had no clue whatsoever. What little I knew about comedy was what I'd seen either on TV or maybe I had gone to a Jonglers in Birmingham or Leicester or something like that. So I was out in New Zealand, and once a year in Auckland, they have the New Zealand Comedy Festival. Mm. And that's when the whole scene, everything just switches to everybody's doing an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, okay, I guess this is a thing. Mm. And, you know, normal sort of progression like you would over here when you go to do your first show, you don't normally just charge in with an hour. You might do a split bill with a couple of other acts. So I think the first thing I did was like a four-hander with these three other guys. So we each did 15 minutes. And that was called Four Heads. I did want to call it Four Skins, but the lads were not into it.
Oh, why not? It'd be hilarious.
I was like, come on. Oh. And then some friends of mine, they split an hour and they asked me to MC it. So, and then my plan was to go from that to doing a two-hander. So like write 30 minutes, share an hour with someone. But a friend at the time said, go on, don't be a wuss. Do an hour. Oh. And that was the sort of challenge that was presented to me. So I was like, all right. I'll do an hour. But I think it was the cluelessness of being still very much a new act who was thinking, oh, the only way I'm going to be able to do a show in the festival is if I have this mystical thing of an hour of comedy. And I think it was a stretch to fill the hour rather than being, I've got too much good stuff. Let me trim it down to an hour. So I was doing all sorts in it. There was like some PowerPoint. I did a couple of songs. It was just ridiculous.
Cool. That's great. Every medium trying it all out, right? Yeah, trolling everything.
I know. And then I took that show to the Adelaide Fringe as well.
Wow.
But I think I dumped some of the multimedia at that point because I remember talking to another act at the time and he said, oh, yeah, he turned up to a show and the laptop didn't work. And I thought, that's a horrible situation to find yourself in. I don't want to do that. So that show that I had loosely scraped together, we moved back to the UK in 2012, and I was like, of course I'll do this Edinburgh Fringe that I've only just heard about. I've got an hour, you know, went there thinking that I was Johnny Big Potatoes, and when really I was still very much a new act who had stretched out an hour, and I just wish that I had known more, because at the time, but that's also a tricky thing, when you want to do your first hour, nothing can stop you.
That's right.
I want to do an hour. And I've since said to other acts who are like, oh, I want to do an hour. And I'm like, you know what? I really wouldn't rush it. And I can tell they're like, oh, look at her trying to tell me don't do an hour. And I'm like, okay, but you're probably going to have the same regrets that I have now. You go ahead. And it's not so much about, like, I know a lot of people make a big thing about the Edinburgh Newcomer Award and stuff like that. I just think that I would have liked to have maybe done a 40-minute show in Edinburgh just to get my head around it a bit more and get a feel for it instead of, you know, I think even getting press, getting reviews and stuff like that, it would have been nicer if I'd delayed the hour. Because to me, I think once you can do 40 minutes, 45, of course you can do an hour.
Yeah.
So, yeah, quite looking back, I would not have done it the same way if I had a time machine.
You were nominated for Best Newcomer in New Zealand Comedy Guild Awards, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's just a thing.
That's good, like, right? But don't say that.
I mean, that was a long time ago, Winter.
Still, it doesn't matter. That's your first show, isn't it? Is that first show?
Oh, no, it wasn't. It was literally Best New Act Who's Around at the moment. It was nothing to do with
awesome. That's the best award in New Zealand, apparently.
It's funny how that reads. Yeah, of course, because if you're not part of the scene, you don't know.
That's great. Well, that's fine. We'll keep that in. But like, honestly, it sounds good. It sounds amazing. When you went to do your first gig, right? What was the thing that just kind of like, oh, I'm doing that? Was that always the thing in your head, back of your head, that you were like, I want to do this? How did you like, what was the launch pad for that?
I mean, you could say my first comedy gig started when I was a kid. My family, we went to like holiday camps and stuff before EasyJet and stuff like that was such a thing. You used to go to like holiday camps in the UK. And they would always have like Pontins, Butlins, whatever it was. Yeah. You know, I'm from a big family. My mum had seven children and I'm number seven. So a lot of kids to take out. And we went to these places and there would always be like there'd be a singer, there'd be a magician, and there'd be a comedian. And I always just used to love watching the comic and just seeing how this whole room full of people would laugh. And I think the first time I ever told jokes on stage, I was at school. I think I just got up and said whatever jokes I could remember, because at the time I didn't realise how bad joke stealing was as a child. And I just, like, every time and then I'd try to think of another one. There was always a bit of me that loved the idea of funny. And then at the same time, there were not many female comedians around at the time, so it wasn't like I saw many. So it never felt like a realistic option.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd go to watch comedy somewhere. Again, it was largely places like Jonglers, and I'd watch and I'd be thinking, I really, you know, there's a big part of me that wants to do it. Yeah. I did think for a long time that I wouldn't be able to do it because I didn't trust that I could remember a set, because I do have quite a bad memory. And then it just came to be that being out in New Zealand, I went along. Right. I was on a date, actually, before I met my fella. I was on a date with some Kiwi guy. And it was like Monday night in Auckland. And we're like, what is there to do on a Monday in Auckland? Yeah. I was like, is there a comedy club? He looked it up. He went, yeah, there was like, it was like rookie night. It was like 10 acts for $5, which was great. Probably £2.50 at the time. So we went along and watched, and I'm not kidding you, Winter. I mean, you've seen a few open mics in your time, but for me, this was the first time in my life that I'd ever seen brand new comics.
Yeah.
Because I'd only ever seen, like, proper professionals. Yeah. I'd never seen people who were a bit shit. I'm not kidding. 8 out of 10 of them were really, really bad. And I was like, oh, you get to be shit in the beginning. I didn't know that. So I just made a decision. I said to them, how do I sign up? And I had in my mind a plan. I was like, I'm going to go and watch every week for about 10 weeks before I get up and do it. And then by then, I met Tom. We were going out, and we went a couple of times, and he was like, I can't take this anymore. He says, I'm sorry. Like, some of the acts he'd recognise, and he'd be like, I'm going to go and wait out there and use my phone for a bit rather than sit through this. And this was before, like, smartphones were cool. So
Snake.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. So I think it weren't 10 weeks in the end. It was probably after about 3. I said, go on and book me in. Because they didn't have comedy courses.
Yeah.
You had to do it the hard way. So I said to them, I was like, hey, are there any courses? They're like, nope. You have to learn the hard way on your feet, up there in front of everybody, not knowing a thing. So yeah, that's how I did my first gig.
That's great. That's like just in at the deep end straight away. Brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Extreme self-esteem like experiences in New Zealand then. Did you do the extreme sports out there too?
Yeah. So when I first arrived there, I went on a thing called the Kiwi Experience Bus. Oh, it's also colloquially known as the Big Green Fuck Bus. not that I got involved in any of that. I think it's the drivers tend to rack up the numbers. Oh, but it's like a big coach that goes around the country, stops in loads of different places. I did a hang glide in Queenstown, and I won a prize. It must have been around Halloween. There was a fancy dress competition. And I won a prize, and it was white water rafting, but not in the raft. It was like on a boogie board.
Oh, my God. What's that called?
I think it was called Black Dog Rafting, the name of the company. But they since got closed down, that company. I think someone died.
Yeah, they're notorious. They're notorious. A friend of mine went on it as well. I said, like, it's insane. You go there, do that. It's insane. It's so terrifying. And
honestly, Winter, I thought I was going to die. Yeah. I was like, this is so frigging scary. Because you've got the board, you've got a life vest and a helmet and flippers. You kick for all your worth. Yeah. That water will send you wherever it wants to send you. You know, there were bits of it. Like, I remember one segment, it was called, I think they called it the washing machine, because the water was so rough. I remember I'm clinging onto the board, and the board got sucked out of my hands and then came flying back and hit me in the face. Oh. And I remember thinking, don't faint here. don't pass out now. Oh, you won't make it out again. So that was pretty scary. The hang glide was wicked. But I didn't do a bungee, and I didn't do a skydive because I'm too much of a wuss.
No, that's fair. I think that Black Dog whitewater rafting is a friend of mine did that, and he was telling me about it, and he said it is terrifying, and it's like, yeah, say it's notorious. Yeah, he did it like 10 years ago, but it's you know, that's when you got to go. But fair play for doing it. It is one of the.
I didn't choose it. I won the prize. Oh. Like, there's no way I would have gone, oh, this looks like a bit of me, but also there's that bit of me that's like, I've won it.
Yeah. It's free. I'm fucking
give
doing
it away.
It.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's right. Right. Nice. Did you manage to get any material out of those experiences?
Do you know, I don't think I ever wrote about doing... The one thing I remember from the hang glide is that you get to film yourself doing it. But I think I must have been pretty scared at the time. And I don't know why, but for some reason, my mouth, like my front teeth, like, I think my top lip managed to like suck itself up the top. So I'm just looking around the whole time. I'm doing the face now, and I know you can't see it, but if you imagine the face, you know, when you really like push your top lip up right to the top of your gums. And I'm looking around, and I saw the video. The guy's like, oh, here's the video. And I'm like a beaver. What the hell am I?
like, is it like because the air was forcing your top lip up? Is that what it is?
I don't know if it was that, or if just in sheer terror it had gone there and I hadn't realised. And I'm looking at the view, thinking this is wonderful, but having no awareness of like, oh, you look pretty stupid right now. So I do remember looking at the video, thinking, well, I'm never going to play that again.
Not cool. Not a cool picture for my Facebook. But that's cool. So when you went up there on stage, do you remember the date exactly? Do you remember your birthday?
I have a feeling It was August, I want to say the 18th, 2008, but right. That might not be right. It's around then, because I knew that I had booked a holiday straight afterwards in Thailand. And I remember thinking, if I bomb, like I absolutely die on my hole, I'll console myself on a beach with a bucket of Samsung whiskey and Coke and, you know, some prawns and whatever. So it was around about then.
Like, do you remember your first joke that you told?
I don't know if I remember the first joke. What I do remember from that set was I had said to Tom, don't tell anyone I'm doing it because I don't want anyone I know to know. I don't want to see anybody that I know in the crowd. And in the run up to doing it, a couple of friends had come with us to watch this Monday night show and everything. And that was that. And then when it came to me doing it, I was so frigging nervous because I've not been on the stage since like the school nativity play.
Smashed that. I mean, that was smashed it. I gotta say, closed it. Brilliant, best gig ever. Zenith of your career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Crowd surfed off. It was everything you dreamed of, right?
That's it. And that's then it. One guy died, but he came back again. It was okay. It was all right.
Exactly, right. And then I remember that day, like I was at work, and I remember going to the bathroom and just pacing up and down the toilets, trying desperately to remember my set, because that was one thing I kept thinking. You're going to forget your material and it's going to be horrible. I remember a couple of the things that I talked about, but I don't remember the order in with which I said it. One of them was about a three-legged dog, and it was something around like, how do you know when a three-legged dog wants to take a piss? Because they're always ready. They don't cut their leg. Nice. So that was one. And the other one was about rubberneckers, and I did a full act out. Like, I dragged the chair to the centre of the stage and I sat in it as though I was driving, and I was sort of like, doing the like yelling at people at the front who are pulling over, being like, what the fuck? And then by the time you get up there, of course, you're like, well, I'm here now, let's see what all the fuss is like. Whoa, look at that. And you get sucked in every bit as much as they did. Yeah. So those were a couple of the bits I did. But what was deadly about that gig was I had said to Tom, don't come, don't tell anyone I'm doing it. I don't want to see anybody there that I know. So I get to the club. And I'm in the green room, which is up the stairs. It's at the Classic in Auckland, which is a proper great club. The green room is above, so you have to walk down some stairs to get there. So I'm in the green room, sitting there, looking at my notes. And Tom called me. Why is he calling me? Doesn't he know I'm freaking out about this gig? And he went, I just want you to know, some friends of ours, Alistair and Jane, just called him and said, hey, we're going to the comedy club tonight. Do you want to come? He said, and I just thought I'd better let you know they are going to be there. And I was like, oh, you're kidding me, this is my first gig, I'm going to be shit, I don't want witnesses that I know. They called my name, please welcome. So I come down the stairs, I get onto the stage, the lights are so bright, like it's my first time in a spotlight, and believe me, my school nativity play did not have the level of lighting of a professional comedy club. So of course you walk out like, oh my god, blinded by the lights. And then I get to the mic, and I'm so in my head of thinking about what I have to say, I can't even hear properly. It's like, you know, when you pick up a seashell and hold it to your ear. So like both ears, so like I'm blinded, I'm kind of deaf. And like all I can see in the pool of the spotlight, front and center of the audience, are Alistair and Jane, our friends. They're right there. And they're the only people I can see because of the bright light. I can't see anybody else. And I have to start doing material for the first time.
And it's about them.
Partway through the set, I got the worst case of dry cotton mouth I've ever had in my life. My mouth. Has anybody got any water? Because my mouth is really dry. And another act came running up. She was like, here, she brought me a pint of water. And I grabbed it and took a sip. And I went, oh, thank God. I said, I'm drying up here like a proper virgin. And I sort of managed to get out of it.
Great.
It was like my first improvise.
Brilliant. Good work. Nice.
But that was sheer terror. And what I thought was weird was how you couldn't see and couldn't hear. I think it took about three gigs before I could actually see beyond the spotlight and actually hear laughter.
Yeah. as you say, with the we can hear shells and stuff. It's like I can hear my blood. This isn't.
Yeah, am I actually?
Is it coming out my ears now? Because I'm not sure. What's happening? Can anyone see? Am I dying? It's like literally. And like it's that classic as well. Those lights are really hot, aren't they? You're like, oh god, it's really hot up here. Is anyone else hot? Yeah. Okay, you're burning up, mate. That's funny. That's great. That's a brilliant story.
I don't know. A shocker on the subject of it being hot on stage, and I remember this. So I've been doing it a bit longer by this point, but I'm still like a relatively new act. And it was St. Patrick's Day, and I'm wearing a green shirt because, you know, why not?
Representing. St. Patrick's Day. I like that. Representing.
And I don't know what was wrong with me that day. I didn't think I was ill, but I think I must have had something like a fever or whatever, but I would never cancel a gig. I will happily go to the club and infect you all.
I can cut this out. It's fine.
I'm reliable. And I remember going up and then getting incredibly hot on stage, like uncomfortably hot. And I'm talking, and even as I'm talking, I'm looking at the crowd, and I can tell they're not looking at my face. And I know they're all looking, and they went from like they were laughing and then they weren't. And I remember thinking, I'm pretty sure this material works. I'm pretty sure this is my good stuff. And I'm thinking, what the fuck's going on? And then by the time I said, thanks, Albus, and I put the mic on the side and walked off, like what I didn't realize the whole time I was talking, I was sweating. But because of this green shirt, the like drops of sweat on my body, like I've never had a sweat like this.
Wow.
Like, The shirt was starting to stick to me. So, like, you know when you get, like, a drop of sweat on your like, it was something like above the belly, like, below the breast, so, like, just there to begin with. And then, like, one becomes many and suddenly it's a patch.
Jesus.
And then by the time I came off stage, I was wearing my hair down. Now, I have long, like, quite thick hair. So it was almost like a scarf. So by the time I turned around to walk off stage, my whole back was just fucking drenched.
Jesus.
And this is like a light green shirt, so you can imagine the sweat patches were horrific. And I never addressed it.
Oh, no.
Because I didn't know.
Oh, shit.
I didn't know. And then when it came off, I looked and I was like, oh, no wonder the crowd were freaking out. They're probably like, what the fuck is wrong with her? And she doesn't know. So, God, that was awful.
Yeah, we can't say anything. Is this part of the act? Is this a massive crescendo coming? I mean, what?
She's the leaking woman.
Oh my god, she's melting. She's literally melting up there, guys.
That is
terrifying. My god. Okay, tell me then, Stella, your worst gig, your worst. Like it was just they were like horrific or a horrific weird story from a gig. Which one you want to share?
Do you know what? I can't. Mine are so boring, and I'm kind of like almost. Sorry that no one ever like tried to start a fight or throw something at me or whatever, but I've never had anything that's been too wild that's happened at a gig so far. For me, like a horrible bomb is just silence. I remember in Edinburgh where I think it was one of the first weekends. It was either that first show or the year after the one I did it. And I remember the opening weekend of Edinburgh, I had an absolute ripper. And I remember thinking, I'm the dogs.
Completely calm.
You know, like, exactly. The following weekend, I have a full house again.
Yeah.
So I'm like, here we go. I'll just do exactly what I... And I just remember the silence, the horrible silence, and thinking, what the fuck? Like, I did this exact same set. This exact same hour that, and I remember just the stony silence of a room full of people looking at me and thinking, why the fuck is this not working? Obviously now I would know how to handle that, but being a rookie then, there was a bomb in Liverpool, burnt me because I remember meeting another act at the gig and then being like, hey, are you going back to London? I was like, yeah. And he said, oh, is there any chance I could catch a lift? Like, of course, you know, jump in. And then he did really well. And then for some reason, they hated me. Mm. I remember this group of old ladies sitting at the front, and then one of them, she just like cut through the silence and she just went, you're a dirty bird. And I remember thinking, what the hell? So I come off stage in that kind of daze that you do, and I'm at the back of the room, like totally in my head thinking, what happened?
Yeah.
And thankfully, and I have to say, like when this happens at a gig, it means so much. There was a couple at the back of the room and they went, excuse me. And I remember thinking, what are they going to say to me? You were fucking shit. Like, they're about to say, can I get a refund? And they went, we just wanted to say, we were at the back. We really enjoyed your set.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on or why they didn't like you, but we thought you were great.
Yeah.
When I tell you, I comment like that is the difference between driving home and just thinking, that's it, I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
And thinking, okay, so it wasn't like a complete disaster. Like, they enjoyed it. But I remember having to drive home and that other act being in the car, having witnessed me bombing and being like, what do you talk about?
Totally.
Just feeling like an utter
failure.
Tit. And to this day, I've not gigged in Liverpool since.
I've got a question for you, right? And so
there was another one that I remember. This might not wash. But
you don't have to smash yourself completely on this, right? You don't have to just put yourself...
I'm curious myself as to how these come across. So this was one that happened in New Zealand. You do kind of need to know a little bit about, or do you? I don't know. There's a famous guy in New Zealand called the Mad Butcher. And he had adverts all over the radio. Oh, wow, the Mad Butcher, blah, blah, blah. Quite a well-known dude. I remember emceeing a gig and I said to this guy, I said, hey, man, what do you do? And he said, oh, I work for the Mad Butcher. Now, at the time, it had been in the news that the Mad Butcher, sadly, he had got cancer. But, you know, as best I knew it, he was doing okay. So I'm like, hey, man, what do you do? Oh, I work for the Mad Butcher. And I said, oh, how's he doing? And the guy looked at me and he went, he's got cancer, like that. And all I could hear was the howling laughter of the other comedians on the bill backstage who were just loving the fact that I've really gone and put my foot in it, right? Yeah, and then I was like, okay, you know, like trying to play it up. I said, yeah, but you know, but you know what I mean? And I went, you know, how is he? And then the guy just looked at me again and he went, he's got cancer. And again, the cacophony of laughter from back. I can hear my friends absolutely dying. They're in absolute hysterics. It's like she couldn't leave it alone.
That's great.
She had to make it worse. So it was funny in a way, but at the time I did feel like a bit of a tit.
But you know what, I'll tell you, I'll share a story with you. Like, I mean, yeah, you know, because the gig I run in Hemel, I MC it all the time, and like there's always a couple in there you kind of see, you know, talk to, so like, you know, just stuff, what do you do, blah blah. But like, I've kind of, you develop a, like a, you know, everyone knows what's going to come next, right? Anyway, there was this guy sitting next to this woman, and I was like, oh, who's this? And like, he was considerably younger than this woman, and I of course made an assumption, and I was like, oh, that's a good idea, Winter. So I was like, is this your son? And I was like, no, that's my boyfriend. But usually I just bat it off, you know, I was like, yeah, it's fine. But because I'd fully gone in with that assumption, my brain went, you've got fucking nothing, Winter. You are such a dickhead. God, you're an arsehole for saying this. Why can't she have a fella that's younger than her? You know, and I was like, oh my God. And the whole crowd just went, you're a dick, Winter. And I was just like, but that was great though. But you know, those little things, that's the kind of things, like you ask a silly question, you're like, yeah, you know, and stuff falls out your mouth sometimes. But I love the fact that you drove it into the wall, through the wall, and then you found another cul-de-sac after that. That is brilliant.
What's funny is that if I was in that situation again now, I think I would double down.
Like, I think you did, though.
I think it's when you're trying to be nice about it. And I think that was the mistake that I made. Whereas now, yeah, I definitely.
But it's like you get but how is he? No, really, I really care. And then it makes it even more hilarious, isn't it? It's brilliant. That's so funny. But I mean, now you're such a, we're such shills that you just go, well, I'm just going to reconstruct that and pretend like that's what I meant, and now I know how to deal with this new situation, which is brilliant. What a lovely fluke though. That's great. And so, and by the way, all those stories, 4 stars Fringe Guru, and Laugh a Minute Fringe Benefits Adelaide Fringe, by the way. Stella Graham. What is your favourite show you've written?
I think the last one that I did in the Edinburgh Just Gone was fun. That show was called Sneaky Little Bitch.
Yeah.
Of course nobody came to review it. Of course. why wouldn't all the people come to the first worst show that I did and then not to the latest stuff? And the one I'm working on now, which would have been last year's show, I'd say that's one of the good things about doing stand-up. It's sort of like you do get better at it year by year. And I think I can see the improvements year on year of the things I'm learning and getting better at and stuff. So I think probably last year's / what this year's one will be would be a favourite. There's like little nuggets and bits and pieces of shows that I enjoyed, and in the way that you'd look at a music album and say, I like that track, or that was a good bit or whatever. But for completeness, I think the Sneaky Little Bitch and this year's one, Undercurrent, when it's
it's your new skin, like it's like your new suit that you wear. It's like, oh my God, I love this jacket. This is the new thing. This is me. This is more me now. This is fully me. That's
these
great.
These are my new lockdown sweatpants.
Yeah. and slippers. Was it, right. So do you love doing roasts as well? Is that right?
I do enjoy a roast battle. I've got the evil in me, Winter.
I love it. Great.
You know, if somebody wants to throw down, I'm down.
Love it. Love it. Have you done the Roast Battle UK as well?
It's only been with the Roast Battle UK. Brilliant. Yeah, I think most of the stuff I've done.
Amazing.
Alan and the guys, it's always a laugh, isn't it?
Oh, it's great. I managed to do the one with the Scots Roast up in Edinburgh a couple of times, and that was the most fun I've had at the Fringe ever. It was brilliant. Oh my God, it was so fun. It was like, oh, I can finally let loose in here. This is wonderful. And such a great crowd as well.
Who did you roast? Anyone?
I roasted Bemacio from a guy from Canada. I think it's Bemacio Odeo. That's what I think he's from.
Oh, okay.
He's Canadian. And he lives in Cambridge for a bit. I think he's gone back to Canada now. But we roasted him, and it was just so fun. Oh my God, it was brilliant. I love it. So I can't wait to start that stuff up again when it all thaws. But yeah, so you're.
I did some online ones as well.
Did you? Okay, who did you roast?
I roasted a guy called Lost Digits.
Okay.
Who's based in the States. Mm. That was a good laugh. I think my favourite roast that I did, because I've judged a couple of roast battles as well. Judging's really easy, actually, because then you don't have to worry about whether you win or lose or what jokes of yours are good. Mm. You just get to judge other people's. It's amazing. But I think my favourite one, I roasted in Edinburgh my friend Marco de Pinto. He's a good mate of mine.
Right.
And we give each other shit all the time anyway. So it's like all the horrible, nasty shit that we say to each other on WhatsApp, we can like say in front of a crowd. He was proper nervous because Marco is more of a promoter than a comic himself. Right. And he'd say that too. So I think he's a bit nervous, whereas I'd already done one at that point. So I'm like, I'm so ready for this.
Great. It's just a bag.
It's so fun roasting someone that you get on really well with who won't take any of it too personally. Yeah. So I did roast someone else. And ever since that roast, this was someone I didn't know very well. And whenever I've seen him since then, I've always felt there's a bit of a tension. Yeah. Did I go too far?
Did you win? Did you win the roast?
I did. but I thought, whereas with Marco, I knew I could say the worst things I could possibly think of, and we'd still be great mates at the end and hug it out and laugh it off.
Brilliant.
I do remember that being a particularly fun night.
Oh, great. That's brilliant. It's such a fun thing. If you can take it, and it's really lovely to see. You just see who the person really is on stage, don't you? Mm. How much they can take. It's like, that really is character revealing. I think the roast.
I'll tell you, another good fun show to do up in Edinburgh that I really enjoyed. Mm. David Sonos runs it. It's called The Drunk and Heckle Show. Oh my God, what a laugh that is.
Totally.
It's like, you can get up on stage and do material if you want, but the crowd are actively encouraged to heckle you.
Mm.
That's the story going in. Now, when he first told me about it, I thought, this sounds horrendous.
Yeah.
But I'm into it. Let's give it a shot. And surprisingly, the crowd are quite nice. And when they do heckle you, it's nothing like the heckles you get at the roast battle. It's like, nobody says anything that brutal, but it's like a fun heckle.
Yeah.
And I would absolutely sign up to do that show again. That was so funny.
Yeah, I did that a couple of times. It's really fun as well. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it. So fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's, I say, just having a bit of a laugh, isn't it? That's it. Just people throwing stuff at you, just see what you got back at them. It's really fun.
Yeah.
Really fun. There's no maliciousness unless they bring it on themselves, isn't it? You know, equal and opposite, right? That's it. You're doing your own podcast as well. What's it called?
Tell Me About It.
Tell Me About It. That's it. How did I not remember that? So it's like, Tell Me About It, right? So, and like, how many of you have done now recently?
I think I just released episode number 9.
Oh, nice.
And I'm doing them once a week.
Like, a couple of years ago, you did an acting course, the Meisner Technique. How was it? Does it help you with everything?
I mean, so I don't know why, but I always tend to like sign up for things not really knowing what I'm letting myself in for. I don't tend to research heavily. I just go, someone told me that might be good. Let me just walk into that and see what it is. And it started out as was like a sort of once a week drop-in acting class in London that I found. And I thought it was just casual. You just drop in every now and then, learn a bit. But then I realised that a track that you could follow where there were modules within it that you could complete and sort of landmarks. And I don't know what I really expected from the beginning. I sort of thought most of my favourite stand-ups can act.
Mm.
Is this not a bad idea to learn?
Yeah.
It went from me turning up thinking, what the hell is this all about, to suddenly, oh God, it's quite intense. Because I remember thinking, what is it? What have you got to do? Like learn lines and then learn how to say them? But no, it was like an absolute emotional head fuck.
Oh, God.
It was like an absolute overhaul of everything. And I think I learned a lot just about people and emotions and stuff like that. And I go into there as someone who's come from like a very buttoned down job. You're like, you know, that's who you are, like, day to day in the work environment. But you've got to be able to portray extremes of emotion. You've got to be able to, at the flip of a switch, be furious or be devastated or be in hysterics. And obviously, there's so many more subtleties within acting, like the very small
stuff.
But you've got to be able to play the range of your instrument. So suddenly walking into this and being like, what the fuck is this place? And what do we have to do? And some of the exercises we did at that place was really, really good. And I learned so much.
Name an exercise that you were like, oh my God, what the fuck is this?
Sometimes people got naked. Really? Yeah, sometimes there were nearly fights. People had to be broken up. Because it's hard to explain quickly, but like some of the extremes, you're put in a scenario. So this is not like day one beginner stuff.
Okay.
Because a lot of people go, oh, Meisner, that's just that thing where you look at each other and go, you have blue eyes, you have blue eyes. Like there are some like very entry-level exercises that you do. And that tends to be people who've not done it properly have only ever done a little bit and they think that's everything.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. That's like saying a stand-up gig is just walking up to a microphone and saying hello. You've not done anything. You've just barely like done what, like the first step. So you progress through all these different elements of it. Because before you even get to learning how to do a script, you've got to learn how to tap into the different emotions that you have and how to read a person, like how to look at them and how to tell just by looking at them what's really going on under the surface. And it's about sort of like connecting with that. But then some of the things we did to get to that, like I remember having a conversation with the people who ran it when I got there and being like, I saw like a couple of people crying. And I said, just so you know, I went, there's absolutely no way I'm ever going to cry. That's what I said. And the teacher went, okay. And by God, did those words come back to bite me in the ass? Because sure enough, months like later down the line, some of the exercises, and then I was just like a howling wreck.
Wow.
I was just in bits. And then suddenly, week on week, if you needed to do it for whatever like the scene demanded or whatever, you could do it. And amazing. I was very shocked by that. But yeah, it was really good. And I loved the people that I met and stuff. And I think I just learned a lot about things about yourself that you didn't know.
Wow.
Emotional. It's very heavy, isn't it? It's not really funny.
No, that's interesting. That's interesting, Stella. No, I'm interested. I'm interested because, like, do you harness a emotion or an experience in your life that you just go, this is the tap, this is the tap that I turn on to cry? Or do you just, like, you know, stamp on your little toe or break a finger? Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, you know.
There are techniques. Yeah, there are techniques that you can do mentally. Yeah. So that if you pick up a script and you've got it still takes a bit of work. You know, you've got to work your way through the script and really pull it apart. I'm not so good that if you just hand me some just immediate from there. You know, it's a little bit more complicated than that. But I had to record a monologue for something recently, and I was like, okay, let's go through the steps, and then sure enough, you know, find your way to it for whatever it is you need to do. But I think apart from just like learning the skill, learning about other people, hearing some of the other people's stories in the classes, and just seeing like the kind of shit that some people carry around with them day to day, like in their lives, not in their backpack, you know, some of the stuff that people have had go on. But it's interesting. I think the type of people that get drawn to things like comedy and acting generally.
That's right. There's a lot of performance and therapy, doesn't it? Quite a lot of often.
I tell you what, a lot of those classes were like therapy, and I was like, and I'd never done therapy.
Yeah.
So for me, I was like, this is way out of my comfort zone.
That's very interesting. It is interesting. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I think at the beginning when I first started comedy, I was like, I didn't want to make people laugh. I wanted them all to pay. Is what I wanted them to do. I was like, and then when I finally topped up that whole of myself, I was like, okay, now what's next? You know, so keto. But I need to hurt myself some other way. I'm feeling too good. But you know, it's that, that's a very interesting technique. It's like, I heard that, you know, do you know James McAvoy?
Yes.
I heard that the way he...
Didn't know him well, see him all the time.
He actually did the Meisner thing, I was like. And so he said, right, that the way he gets himself to cry is to pluck his nose hair.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you've got to get that shit long. You got to get that shit long. And when there's what's my good side? This side without the long ass nose hair that I'm going to try and pluck out for this crying scene.
You're like, get a few of them all at once, right?
Yeah, you need to really wrench those bad boys out. Like, you know, that is not going to be fun. But I find that like the comedy really helps with, I think, the acting stuff. All right. Number one, worst audition you've ever done? You remember, like, before, like, you've done any acting or anything like that, maybe you've done a couple that you went, oh my God, because I can tell you one of mine in a minute.
Okay. I mean, there could be a couple of candidates here. The first time I went for an acting audition before I'd ever had acting lessons, I walked in and looked at the camera, and then the guy went, you looked at the camera. And I was like, oh, sorry. I'd never had acting classes. I didn't know what the fuck I was meant to do. Yeah. I was just someone who's like, maybe I can drag my way into this.
Yeah.
So that was embarrassing. There was another where, God knows why, but for some reason, New Zealand, I think, small country, small population, small pool of talent, needed somebody to be the special K girl.
Amazing.
They called me, and I walked in. And like, I don't dress in the most, like, feminine outfits at the best of times. So I'm wearing this, like, awful pair of shorts and T-shirt. Yeah. And I turn up, and I see a girl sitting there with a big smile on her face. She sort of waved at me. And I thought, yeah, I can see why you're smiling, because she was stunning. She had, like, feminine special K-type girl outfit on. Yeah. And I was like, I think I've just seen who's getting the job. I'm clearly here to make the numbers.
Oh, man.
And as part of that audition, you had to walk in, sit down, pour yourself some special K, pour some milk, take a scoop and eat it.
Right.
But it was the height of summer, and this milk had been out all day. And I don't eat cereal that much, so I'm like pouring this like warm going off milk and trying to get a spoon of it into my mouth and act like it's the best thing ever. Not that good an actor, Winter.
Not easy. So I tell you this. All right,
I get that one.
All right, I totally get that. I was the same as you right at the beginning. I was like, I tell you, I might be able to blag this acting thing. I think, you know, I should be able to smash this. I think it was like 2022, something like that, right? I did an acting thing, and again, no acting experience, all just bravado and just like, of course I can do this, no problem. Yeah, I was just walking, they looked at me and I got the job. And they were like, this was for a Pepsi commercial. You might have seen this one on this Pepsi commercial. I wasn't in it, surprisingly. I've buried the lead here. So
it's a guy there who looks a bit like Winter.
So no, not nothing at all. I think they were like, we definitely don't need anyone like this guy. So they went in and it was like, what experience do you have in martial arts? Well, 10 years of karate, great. Black belt, great. Happy days, right, got that. So go up and now pretend like you can see a can of Pepsi just floating in the air. It's like, okay. I have done no visualization or looking at, do you know what I mean? Like where the camera is. And so looking what I did for the audition, I was completely cross-eyed for the entire fucking goddamn audition and I was like, oh, Winter, if you do that, you're completely cross-eyed. It's, yeah, oh my God, I don't know how the director and all the rest, the other two people that were there didn't laugh their heads off and also before that, they had to do a fight scene with yourself and, which was fine. I usually did that anyway, but it had to do like, you know, punches and kicks, so that was fine. But I went first and this other guy was like, do you mind if I take my top off? This guy took his top off and he looked like the fucking Incredible Hulk, this guy. I was like, and then he starts doing all these spinning butterfly kicks and like, you know, one-handed fucking like double kicks to the imaginary guy's face, his own face nearly. And then I was like, oh shit, why did I stay? Why didn't I just do the audition and get the fuck out of there? And I've been like, you know, but I watched this guy and you know how like you're just trying to escape him on the tube. You don't, you know, they're going the same direction as you. It's like, oh God, they're on the same, right, now they're on the same carriage. That's great. And I just couldn't get away from this guy forever.
He was following you on purpose.
It was ridiculous.
But I
saw this guy on the fucking BBC iDents and he was doing the backflip. He was doing the running, the parkour stuff, you know?
Uh-huh,
and that's the same guy. I was like, fuck. And he was amazing, amazing. But anyway, that's my horrific audition beginning. That was years ago, but you know, it was so silly. But I'll tell you, I don't want to keep you too long, Stella, because I know you got to have a life and fucking you got butter and salt and like black kale
coconut
to eat.
Milk.
Oh my
coconut
God.
Milk.
Hell yeah.
We're from Sri Lankan, right? So you've got to love the coconuts.
This is true. This is very true. Was it mango? I'm big fan of mango. How do you not have mango when you're keto? How does that?
You know, I just don't buy it.
Oh God! I buy
raspberries. I get frozen blueberries are quite good because if you keep them in the freezer, you haven't got to worry about them going off.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes they can taste a bit better than
I think
fresh.
So too.
Yeah. But yeah, berries are the way.
Yeah.
Failing that, look, I say 80% good as much as you can. Chop up an apple, put some peanut butter on it. That's nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. But okay. Oh, peanut butter and apple. I never had that. That's new.
Yeah. I buy peanut butter by the bucket. So
me
it's
too.
Like a kilo tub. Yeah. I think I've got a tub of almond butter as well. Oh. And because it's lockdown, I'm probably going to have a go at making some. Because really, it's awesome. Just roast and blitz some nuts in a
food so process. Like just it's like, do you get the crunchy Mm-hmm. It's got to be done because it takes longer to eat. You got to like, okay, right, just, you know, it's like,
oh, yeah,
mini
yeah.
breaks. Okay, right, question, before we go, I got to ask you this question. I ask everyone who I have on the podcast this question. As a performer, a comedian, what do you see yourself as? It could, did you model yourself on anything before you went up there? Or is there, it could be imaginary thing, a job, a person, when you go up on stage, do you have any of this thing, a model of something in your head?
It used to be that I thought it was just me going on stage. Whereas now I see more as in that is the character of Stella on stage. Because I think for me, it makes more sense to separate out. Because sometimes I think when I'm me, I might dick about a bit too much or like, I don't know, be a bit too more flaky. But I think it's sort of like trying to craft and be the sort of comic that I want to be.
Right.
Then I think of there's the me off stage and then there's the character of Stella.
Okay. But for this question, I've had jobs. Some people say they're PCSOs. Some people say they're IT technicians. Do you have like a job in mind that you could possibly potentially be in this role as a comedian? Like, you know, when you're with the audience.
When I'm on stage?
Yeah.
I'll give you crowd something. Control.
So like, yeah, you, sometimes, yeah, for sure. You're like
a riot police.
Yeah,
a ringmaster.
So, okay, yeah. Ringmaster. Right.
Quite like it. I think if I went on with the whip and everything.
Okay, cool.
Like, shut the fuck up at the back. I'm trying to talk.
It's great.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. That's no. Great. I mean, because sometimes it is a bloody circus out there, isn't it?
No, big time. You're doing a podcast.
Tell me about it.
Oh, why can I not?
Look,
why?
I mean,
how can I not remember this?
Here's the trouble, right? So I did a podcast back in 10 years ago or more when I was in New Zealand with three other guys. Mm-mm. And at the time, podcasts weren't everywhere.
Oh,
you know, they were not so popular. So we had the very snappy title, The Comedy Hangover.
Uh-huh.
And it was quite apt because there were three of us would go in a studio with like a 12-pack of beer and a 6-pack of cider and get drunk and talk shit. Yeah. And it was wicked. But then, you know, one of them moved away. Oh. I came back to the UK, so the podcast disbanded. So fast forward 10 or so years, 10, 11 years, and then now I'm like, oh, I should do a podcast because, you know, every comedian's got to have one.
Yeah.
Every podcast name I thought of was taken.
Oh.
And I don't think I spent long on it, but long enough to get annoyed, which isn't very long for me. I was like, oh, why didn't I call it this? No, some bastard in Germany's got that one.
Yeah.
Well, what about this? No, those three girls have got it. Okay, what about this? So everything I went for, I was like, fine, I'm going to have to do something that hasn't been taken. Why don't I put my name in it? What's the odds?
Yeah.
So that's how I came to Tell Me About It.
Right, okay, cool. That's great. Now I remember, Tell Me About It.
Yeah.
You go to your podcast, Tell Me About It. And it was, when's the next podcast going to be released?
Next one's Monday. So
it's every Monday.
Yeah.
Every Monday, cool.
Monday. Yeah.
All right, and you do it, and you're going to be hawking around your sneaky little bitch when it's the old things thaw again? Is that
it
right?
should be Undercurrents.
Undercurrents, sorry.
It's the new one. That's right.
I'm totally fucking this up, man. I'm trying to do an exit strategy here, and it's just like, oh my God, Winter, you're just fucking, Winter. Just nail your...
If I don't finish writing Undercurrent, it will be Sneaky Little Bitch.
Oh,
so, you know, or I could be a Sneaky Little Bitch and put the material of Sneaky Little Bitch in Undercurrents.
Good plan.
You know?
Good plan.
Might be
right.
More right than you think.
And do you think that this one is more darker than your Sneaky Little Bitch one?
I do.
I think, yeah.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, I do.
Great. I've been, because I did clean the last 2 years, and now it's my black heart is finally free to roam.
You can't deny it forever.
You can't. You can't.
It's
in there. It's like everyone's like, well, this guy's lying to us. He's too happy. Like, this is bullshit. This is not the fucking case. And so, yeah, we've got to let it out.
I actually did the Leicester Comedy Festival on Zoom.
Oh, yeah.
I did an hour long show on Zoom. Never done that before in my life.
How
so I'm hoping normal shows will come back. Do you know what? It was good fun. I had done shorter spots. I'd done, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever, on Zoom. What I did partway through the hour, sort of 35, 40 minutes in, I switched to my iPad and took a little wander around the house with the crowd around the house and just like, yeah, did some stuff in the kitchen, did some stuff in the lounge, then came back to the laptop. And it was just nice just to sort of mix it up and break it up because I think people can get a little bit of Zoom fatigue.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great idea.
Izzy Lawrence helped me out with that. She told me other acts who were doing an hour were using a second camera.
Oh.
And at the time, I was like, the best way for me to do that is just to switch to the iPad and go mobile for a bit, which I did. And it was really good fun, especially as I was heading back to the computer and then I dropped the iPad. So
so it was a really lovely cut, fade to black.
Just how we rehearsed it, yeah.
Just, you got Tell Me About It coming up on every Monday, and you are just writing the shit out of that undercurrent it all thaws. That's great. And where else can we find you?
Where else can you find me? I mean, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Stella Graham. On Facebook, it's Stella Graham Comedian. I own stellagraham.com. So, God damn it, if you can't find me by putting Stella Graham into Google and maybe comedy, Well, the YouTube channel, I think it's youtube.com/thestellagraham. So I'm a little bit obsessed with getting my name into my handles.
I like that. That's a good idea. Fair play. It's got to be done, isn't it? Where else are you going to find you? You know, apart from, well, yeah, it's branding. It's all about branding.
I feel this has been a very one-sided conversation now, Winter. I feel like I didn't ask about you at all.
Hey. They've already heard about me. They don't care about me anymore. It's all about the guest. It's been a pleasure talking to you about little tips about keto as well, trying to make myself give me a bit of joy in my life too. It's been great to talk to you, Stella. Always a pleasure seeing you at gigs, even though you don't believe that I'm half Sri Lankan. I love that. I love it. I know. She's going to fucking rail me. By the way, my brother looks a lot darker than I. So, but yeah. It's all true. I need a picture of my dad to show you the next time. But
I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure I've already told you this before, but I'm half Sri Lankan.
That's
and
right.
I did a gig once years ago before Ramesh was the big name that he is now.
Yeah.
And he went on years ago before he was a big name, and then I went on after him, and I mentioned being half Sri Lankan, and I could tell the crowd were looking at me going, "No, you're not. Yeah. We've just seen a Sri Lankan dude, you lying bitch. Yeah. You know nothing like." Yeah. I know how you feel.
I know. I mean, it's like we should all go up together and go, like, "I'm half Sri Lankan," and they go, "Well, you don't believe me? Well, look at this guy. This guy's half Sri Lankan as well." It's just a DNA test right there and then. That's what would have to happen. But yeah, that's it. But hey, Stella, thank you so much for giving me your time for the last hour or so. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed it. Cheers, Winter.
And that was episode 112 with a sister from another mother, half Sri Lankan, hilarious comedian that she is, Stella Graham. She's on Twitter as Stella Graham, Instagram the same, on YouTube, The Stella Graham. She has her own website, which is stellagraham.com. And she's even got her own podcast called Stell Me About It, available where you get all your good podcasts from. I hope you enjoyed that one, guys. We talked about everything from black kale to the best knife. Look, you need a good knife. Gotta get the food in. Comedy is all about staying energized. You gotta slice that stuff up pretty good to cook it. Look, we're giving you everything here. Comedy, cooking tips. You gotta feed the mind. That's what it's about, though. Honestly, look, if you ever see Stella on a bill, go and check her out. She's an absolutely excellent comedian, great joke writer, and a really lovely person as well. So look, if you ever see her on a bill, you will not be disappointed. So go and check her out on all of the socials and follow her to make sure you know when her next gig date is. As well as following Stella, you can follow me online. My name is Winter Fonander, and my Instagram handle is at Winter Dominus. Same on Twitter as well. Same on TikTok. And that's spelled WINTERDOMINUS. I changed my name to Dominus because no one could pronounce my name on stage. I don't know what was wrong. It's spelled phonetically. So yeah, I changed it. They just call me Winter, but now they're pronouncing my name correctly. Ah, fate, you cruel mistress. But yeah, so you can find me in all those places there. You can also find this podcast page on Facebook. Go and like that. And you can also join the Comedy Defect podcast group, and you can find the podcast popping up there and also gig dates when I'm gigging more. But there'll be preview dates coming up on that for my show that I'm writing about breaking my legs. So yeah, I'm getting there. I'm slowly getting there, and I will keep you updated on the walking mission. So that was the hilarious Stella Graham for episode 112. Next month, we've got somebody who's directed over 100 shows, performed to over 2,000 people, helped numerous comedians build their Edinburgh shows. She's excellent on structure and narrative and just a great comedian. That's at the end of May, the last Wednesday of the month. We've got the excellent comedian, Rachel Krieger. See you then.